Today's February 23rd, 2021. This is Mona Raminetti of Stonybrook University Libraries interviewing Maria Torciano for the COVID-19 Documenting Stony Brook University's Experiences Project. Marie, thank you for sharing your experiences with us today and contributing to this project.
So happy to be here.
Oh, very good. So we're going to get started. The first question is, what is your position here at the university and how long you've been here?
So I've been here at the Stony Brook University for the last 21 years, and I am currently the Director of Recreation and Wellness.
Wow. So 21 years you've been part of Rec and Wellness?
Yes, I have my whole career here.
Oh, that's impressive. Okay, so what groups or areas of campus are you most involved with, including Rec and Wellness?
So right now I currently oversee our fitness, our intramural area, sport clubs, the Walter J. Harries Campus Recreation Center. I'm involved in a lot of departments within student affairs with collaboration, such as the Center of Prevention and Outreach, Student Health, Career Center. So recreation kind of goes outside of just rec and wellness. We try to kind of collaborate a lot with the Division of Student Affairs.
Very good.
Also outdoor recreation. I do a lot of rentals. Challenge course. We have a low ropes course, so we oversee out our challenge course area as well.
Very good. So what were you working on at the start of the spring semester right before COVID?
So we were, getting ready. So that was around March. So it would have been probably January, getting ready for the spring 2019. Is that correct, the date?
2020.
Mm-hmm. Academic year. So we were getting ready for the spring, which would have been our opening week. So right when classes start, we have a big opening week, which we do a lot of activities. So that's kind of where we were at and in mid-programming. So our intramural sports season would have been starting and getting underway. Our fitness classes would have been getting underway. So all our activities and programs were just getting to started.
Okay.
During that time.
Okay. When do you first remember hearing about the COVID virus? And what were your feelings about it?
So, I mean, I think probably in December, I maybe heard some things about it in China and never thought anything of it other than, oh, it's a virus or it's like the flu. And then kind of in January, heard it. I know February, I heard about it again, but never really thought it would come to Long Island. I mean, I remember hearing about it hitting Washington State, and I was actually going on vacation in February, right during President's Week. And someone said, oh, you're still traveling. I said, why? Why wouldn't I travel? And they said about COVID. And I was like, oh, that's in Washington State. That's never going to come here. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just a flu that, people would recover from very quickly. And I remember coming home and landing, and people were trying to get masks, and talk at the university was like, oh, it's starting to come across the country. Like, I just remember it like a wave coming across. So that's kind of where it was like, oh, in the end of February, I was like, oh, this is not a joke anymore. Like, not that it was, but it was like, now it's more real to me and it needed to be taken seriously.
Right. So as the director of Rec and Wellness, were the folks that you're working with, were they of the same mentality, I guess, or perception of what COVID was?
I don't think we were kind of really taking it seriously as it should have been. I know we were talking about it, and then you would hear about cases and then people dying. And again, it wasn't like overwhelming to where it was when it came to Long Island. And then it really affected us when we had to shut down the building and shut down the department and shut down campus at that point. And then it was like, oh, now it's getting a little scary.
Right. I'm just remembering the last meeting we had at Rec and Wellness, and I think we were in a different conference room, and the atmosphere, you weren't present. Tom was leading the meeting, And I think that's when it became very sobering. I think it might have been the February. It might have been the
Yeah, it probably
February.
was the break that I was away that week and he took over the
Oh,
meeting. And I
okay.
just remember, like, I think someone actually someone gave me masks. They're like, "Oh, take these masks." And I was like, she's like, when you go on the plane, like, make sure you wear them. And I was like, "Really?" And then she's like, "Yeah, wear them." And I was like, "Okay." So I didn't wear them there, but I did wear them coming home because we were watching the news. We were in another country. And I remember watching the news and was like, "Okay, we should probably pr start protecting ourselves."
Right. So, how did you learn about the plans to close the campus?
It's kind of like happened all of a sudden. Like, I think there was a lot of talk going on and what will happen. And literally, it was like a phone call and saying, "Okay, you're closing the rec center down now." And then everything else was kind of a blur. The entire campus stopped. And it was just, little steps leading towards that. Like, what would you do if you had to work from home? Like, what's your plan if we had to have you guys work from home? So we had to kind of produce some work plans. What we would do if we were home, so that we would have a good enough workload that we could kind of transfer our offices into our private residencies.
Right. Now you guys were affected, I think, more so than the others because I think they had taken charge of the Rec and Wellness building, no?
No, so
No?
what happened? They did take, so the state took control of our intramural field complex where they built the
Okay.
field hospitals,
Okay.
so which are currently still there, the field hospitals. But yeah, they came in. There were quite a few locations that the New York State was looking at, and I think the best location was the field location. So that's where they decided, we're going to build the field hospitals. Right when the curve was at its highest is when that decision was made. And unfortunately, they never used the field hospitals because by the time they were built, the curve was going down. So, which is good.
I'm glad that you stated that because I remember hearing stories that the Rec and Wellness actually the building itself was set up as or as a temporary triage spot, and I think that was the understanding a lot of folks had prior to the field hospitals being constructed. But I'm glad you cleared that up. It was just the field hospitals that were constructed.
Yeah, they were looking at our rec space, the recreation, the Walter J. Harries Rec Center. They were looking at this space as a triage area. But once the state takes it over, they keep it. So like the field hospitals, they're not planning, I don't know when they're going to take them down, but that space is now unavailable to students. And I think the rec center, knowing the value of it to students, if we were to take that offline, it would still be offline to this day. So the university was trying to redirect resources. And the location of the field was the best resource. And the athletic complexes too. Their field complexes had field hospitals as well on their sites.
Okay. So what did you have to do to prepare to leave campus?
Well, we had to get, it was kind of interesting. We don't think about laptops or anything. We have everything in Google Docs, which is nice, but it was we had to kind of run around and get laptops and make sure the laptops were all updated with the latest software. Some of the, our home computers aren't meant to be at work, right? So we don't have a lot of the programs that we have on in front of us. So that was a challenge. We had some, like, probably 3 weeks to really prepare ourselves to kind of, this might be the outcome is that we're going to work from home. So we had to put a list together of what the projects we were going to work on. And a lot of it was kind of redirected towards the end of the spring and how we're going to turn our programs, in-person programs, to virtual. So we did a lot of that. The first month was really trying to engage students because there was no social interaction at that point.
Right. And how effective were you at engaging the students at this point, or did people not realize the severity of the situation just yet?
No, I think people realized at that point, because that was March, I think we got shut down. I'm going to say mid-March. I'm not 100% sure when we were shut down. But within the week, the staff at Rec and Wellness, did a great job with going online and doing a hybrid. We did virtual fitness classes and then virtual trivia. So that's kind of what we were able to offer the students within a week of us closing the rec center. So we were kind of, we jumped on it. We kind of did a lot of research really quickly about what other schools, you know, in rec school, recreation departments were doing across the country. And a lot of them were, went right to virtual fitness classes and then trivia, like engaging in online trivia.
And the students were very responsive to this new change in programming?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get a huge amount of people, but we did. We reached out. We got people. Like, we offered it, so we were able to offer programming, which is what our goal was. Now, you know, maybe we had five or six people in a fitness class, but that was five or six people that could benefit from it. Our trivias, you know, we'd have about 20 people in our trivia. And at this point, you know, I'm assuming students were going home and they're in their own house and they've got other distractions and they're dealing with COVID on a personal level. So we didn't really, you know, have anything really set in stone until, you know, this past fall semester is when, you know, we had a program ready to go with a, you know, a hybrid model.
So I'm going to circle back to, you mentioned you had to run around and get laptops. Is it that your department had to purchase them, or how did you get these laptops?
Oh yeah, we purchased actually prior to when COVID started coming and being talked about more. I had our administrative assistant order laptops, but they didn't. But at that point, it was right before it started getting crazy. They didn't come in time, so we had to use the old laptops that we have hanging around. And they're slow and they're not updated the way they need to be. And again, at that point, we couldn't get them updated. We just had to use what we had.
Right. And getting back, oh, actually, I'm going to circle back also to, you had mentioned the field hospitals. We're coming up on the fall. And those, I guess, will still be offline. Is there a contingency plan for Rec and Wellness to deal with those or no?
Well, we got to wait for the state. I mean, again, they were there, put there for a reason to save people's lives. So, you know, at this point, you know, they need to stay up as long as they need to stay up. And that's the way, that's fine by me. Once they come down, we do have a 5-year plan in place. We're trying to save money now to pay for the renovations of the fields once the field hospitals get broken down. So it's not going to happen in the fall. I mean, from what I heard, I haven't heard anything about the fall 2021 that the hospitals are coming down. So we'll just have to wait and see what, how the university handles it with the state. I guess it's a state decision when they come down.
Right. Okay. How did you feel about leaving campus?
I mean, at first it was fine. You know, at first it was fine. It wasn't like, I didn't think I'd be gone for so long. So I think it was just like, all right, we'll see you guys in a week. And that would have been it. But then a week turned into a month and a month turned into many months. And it was just kind of like you came back when we came back in July, I think it was the first time we were allowed to come back. You're just like, you left your desk like in an array because you kind of had to leave. So it was kind of like it's everything stopped in time for a year, 6 months. So it was, you know, and as it's longer it took, you know, the more we didn't have much social interaction. You know, and you kind of missing other people besides your family because all you are is staying at home, because I literally didn't leave my house. Like, I literally stayed home, didn't visit people, you know, for the first, especially when it got bad on Long Island or specifically in Suffolk. I heeded the warning of staying home. Right. So, and it was, you know, for 3 or 4 months, there's really no social interaction except with your family members. And then FaceTime. And then when you got to FaceTime someone, you were like, oh, this is nice. Like, you kind of miss it. You miss the interaction with people.
Yes, yes.
You know, I remember, you know, dropping off food for my parents who are elderly and just being, seeing them at the door and didn't, you know, I didn't go near them. I just left it at their door and I saw them come out, pick it up and then go back in.
Wow.
And that, you know, that's tough, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Has that changed much or?
Yeah, I mean, they got their shots, which is great. So okay. They got their second shots, and now they're, you know, and my father's 93, you know, and again, if someone in his population would get it, you know, what are the chances of surviving? So I just, you know, they were calling him every day, like, don't go anywhere, stay home, you know, whatever you need, we'll go out and get it for you.
Right.
So, and just trying to protect them, you know, over me, like, I got it, hopefully I would survive it, you know.
Right.
But you hear so many stories of people that are healthy and not surviving it.
Right, right. So what was your routine if you did have one during quarantine?
So basically it was just kind of like I tried to make it as a work day. You know, we had my son and my partner all had, you know, my son's going to school, so he has to start school at a certain time. So he'd get up, start school. I would start, as soon as he started school, I'd go onto my laptop and start working. You know, and every day with my staff, with the rec and wellness staff, we set up meetings at 10 o'clock every day. So every day at 10 o'clock, we always checked in with each other. So we had a half hour of interaction, an hour. We would just talk about work and then personal stuff. And then, you know, talking about COVID and how, you know, how everyone is feeling and how they're getting through it. You know, even oftentimes we'd be on a Zoom call listening to Cuomo's, you know, daily press conference too.
Right, right.
So, so we stayed connected with, you know, work, our work family, we stayed connected every day just because, you know, I felt it important that we stay, you know, just try to treat it as normal as it could be, work day.
Yeah. I'm gonna hop on the term you just used there, work family. I think more often than not, we tend to take our interactions at work for granted. And I don't know if you folks experienced it, but I think a number of us here did as well, where that void was clear and present for a long time in terms of that second family, that second entity in your life.
Yeah. I mean, we missed each other. And I remember the first time, like just being in the same office with each other, we're like, oh my God, like, hi, how are you? I get to see you. I can't touch you. I got to stay 6 feet. I got to wear a mask, but it's good to be back. It's good to have some kind of normalcy back in our life, you know, and work was normal. Like work is a routine for us every day, you know, and you miss that. You miss that whole routine stopped. Like it literally stopped in its tracks. And now you're working and trying to like keep you're safe, you yourself safe, your family safe, and sacrificing like your social life, you know, and what you do just to keep your, you know, to stay away from this horrible virus.
Okay. How do you think you found some success balancing the private and work life? And if you did, when did it actually kick in for you?
So I think when in March, so it probably in like kind of May when it was, the weather started to change and it was nice in June, I just remember like going to a meeting at home and then bringing my computer outside and sitting outside with the sun, you know, and it was nice and warm. And it was just nice to get the sun out and it's nice to be outside in clean air, you know, in fresh air. Like at that point, like towards the summer, it was kind of like, all right, I can step away from my computer for 30 minutes and go outside and relax, you know, and enjoy the sunshine, enjoy, you know, being outside. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, didn't do any, you know, I really didn't honestly do anything until I think the first time out was going back to work, honestly.
So you felt beholden to your computer? Like most
yeah.
of us did?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it was more work. You know, I think we worked more during COVID and at home than we did at work because always at work, I can step out of my office and talk to Tom or talk to Marlene. It didn't have to be anything about work. It could just be anything. But here we were like kind of focused on goals that we had to accomplish. So we really didn't have too much interaction with other people other than our families who were already busy doing their own stuff.
Right.
So it was just me and my computer and that was it. You know, so you're...
Yeah, it can have a sort of an isolating feeling after a
yeah.
while.
And, you know, I have a person, you know, and I, you know, I felt, you know, responsible. I'm here, I'm getting paid. I was fortunate. I mean, so fortunate that we were able to continue our jobs and continue to work, you know, that I felt it a responsibility to make sure that I'm getting my work done, you know, and not lacking off and not doing anything. Like I felt like very like focused on, you know what, I'm fortunate. I see on the news, people are losing their jobs. They have no money. They can't pay their rent. And I'm here working.
Right.
And I'm fortunate about that. And, you know, there was nothing I wanted to do to ruin that. So, you know what, when someone called me, I was there. I answered my phone immediately, answered emails immediately.
Right. So do you think gave you the most comfort during this time period? I mean, we're still in it, but not as entrenched, I guess.
I just think just knowing my family was safe, like just knowing, you know, just being safe and knowing that people were okay. You know, knock on wood, no one in my immediate family has gotten COVID. So it just, you know, we didn't have those pressures around us. Like I didn't have to send someone to the hospital and leave them there. And that was like one of my biggest fears. Like if my parents ever got sick, like we'd have to leave them at a hospital and walk away. I mean, to this day, you still have to, which is, you know, to me is scary.
Yeah.
And even in Italy, when they were turning the elderly people that were old, they weren't even saving their lives. It's overflow of COVID patients. So they were prioritizing who to save. And I was like, that's scary.
Very scary.
And that was happening here at some point too. And I was like, at some point it's got to get better.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, that just kind of was like, okay, a wake up call, just stay home. Don't do anything. So, you know, and I love being at my house. You know, I have a nice outdoor patio and it was just like an oasis to get away. Like, you know, it's set up with an outdoor TV. So we could just hang out outside and relax, had a fire pit. Like, so those were things that we could enjoy, you know, and not stay in the house all the time.
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, we all make the assumption that we kept in touch with each other via Zoom, but is there any other way you kept in touch with people during home isolation?
Honestly, it was through Zoom or, you know, if it was a neighbor, you know, some elderly neighbors that I would check in on, but would be across the fence, you know, telephone. So just a couple of times, like in the street, I would go to my parents' house because they don't know how to use Zoom or anything. Mm-hmm. So, but basically that was literally it. I mean, there was no other, you know, way. We would just do like during the holiday, I remember Thanksgiving and Easter, we kind of did a big family Zoom because again, we didn't celebrate any of those holidays together, which we normally do.
Right.
So even Christmas, we didn't spend together.
Strange, right?
Yeah, very strange. But again, you know, the purpose, you know, it was done for a reason. Like we chose to make that decision because I know people that have gotten together for Thanksgiving and they all 15 or 20 of them got COVID. Even then when they asked you not to get together for Thanksgiving. And I said, well, there you go. That's the reason why.
Yeah. It's so far reaching, you know,
and, you know, again, it's one Christmas, it's one Thanksgiving, it's one Easter, hopefully. You know, hopefully by then the next time it comes around, we'll all be together.
Right. So was there something that you thought would be a concern that wound up not being so?
No, not that I can think off of the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I mean, work-wise, I think we had a pretty good solid plan. You know, the concern with the Department of Health and getting the recreation center inspected, but it ended up not being an issue. You know, it ended up going great, you know, so that was kind of a stressful period when we had to reconfigure what the rec center is about because gyms couldn't open at one point. So the recreation center is considered a gymnasium. So we kind of rethought about what the rec center is and made it into more of a community center. Mm-hmm. So if you take out the free weights, you take out the track, take out the cardio, we kind of turn the gym into an arcade and backyard games that you wouldn't find in a gym. So that's how we were able to open the rec center prior to opening, quote unquote, the gym. So from, I guess, September, I think we opened Labor Day weekend up until October, mid-October, it was kind of a community center. And then once the Department of Health came in, gave our inspection and cleared us, then we were able to open the rec center, I think October, towards the end of October, early November, as a gym.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sorry. So that was the only concern really was the Department of Health inspection because the university was very, I wouldn't say worried, but they were making sure that we had our I's dotted and T's crossed. You know, just because they wanted to make sure that we were set up the right way, because it's important for the students to be able to go somewhere, because the students were as just as isolated as everyone.
Right. Did you find that the students wanted to communicate with you more than usual, or less, or it was just they just went in there focused?
I think they were, obviously now the students are just coming and working out and leaving, right? So there's no more social kind of interactions because we aren't able to do that. So the students that work with us, yes, are social. They come in, they stop at the door, because we kind of have some rules, like no one goes in anyone else's office, just stay at the door. And they'll stand at the door and talk, which is great. Again, people, we miss all this. Mm-hmm. And the good thing that I said, there's some good things that came out of, and again, COVID, I'm not saying it's great, but there's some things that came out that were, for me personally, were good. We have a smaller staff, so I got to know the student staff a lot better because we don't have as many. We went from 200 staff members to maybe 50. Okay. So our pro staff is now able to really engage and socialize on a professional level with our student staff, which makes the operation of the rec center run very smoothly. In the Zoom meetings, we can have a Zoom meeting with the sport clubs at 9 o'clock at night. I don't have to stay on campus until 9 and then have everyone meet, come to the rec center to meet. Now we can do everything at home, which is, to me, is a benefit.
Wow. So is that something you have to do, have 9 o'clock meetings?
Sometimes. Yeah. Well, the sport clubs, because they're students, they have classes. So when we have our meetings, we have our meetings later at mm-hmm. night in person. So now, again, this is something that I would continue to do, is to do Zoom at night. Mm-hmm. Because we had 125 students show up at the meeting virtually, when if we had it in person, we probably would have gotten 20. Mm-hmm. So, and it's convenient for everyone. So they can be home, they could be at lunch, at work and have a break and then kind of jump in on the meeting. So it makes it a little bit more easier to attain attendance at these meetings when they're virtually.
Mm-hmm. Are there any, you pointed out some of the positives. Are there any additional positives you'd like to share with us?
I think people, personally me, it's just like you realize what's important in life. Mm-hmm. Like it really reevaluates what life is and kind of how lucky people, I'm fortunate, very fortunate to have, that we are able to continue to work here at Stony Brook and to continue making our salary, what happens, next month or whatever, but we got through the bad parts of it. And it's just, you have to kind of make the best of what the world gives you. So being isolated for so long, you kind of just make good with what you have and kind of appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you'd mentioned that, you had to scale back both your staff and your student staff. If all goes well and we're fully functional in the fall, is this something in the practices that you've sort of incorporated right now? Do you think you'll be able to scale that up now with a larger staff and faculty?
Oh yeah. Staff? Yeah. We would have to, cause we'd increase the building hours. We mm-hmm. would increase the staffing. That's all intramurals would be at full capacity fitness classes. I mean, we went from, 45 fitness classes a week to maybe now 10 or 11. So mm-hmm. it's a big change, but again, we're doing a virtual and hybrid, we can only have so many people in a room, intramurals. A lot of the sports we do are high risk. So we're not really even getting involved in the high risk sports at this point. So we're just kind of have a skeleton schedule. The rec center is open more hours now than it has been. So we're open 6 to 10, which in the past it was 9 to 5. So we're increasing hours slowly. And no cases have ever been traced back to the recreation center. So as far as I know and my knowledge, we've never been, nothing has been traced back to anyone getting or catching COVID from here.
Okay. So do you think you will continue having sort of a hybrid menu of programming, or is it when you back in person again, it's fully in person again?
I think we'll, I think intramurals will continue, we'll go in person full time. Fitness, we might do some virtual. classes. Again, they were never really that popular. I mean, we would have, you know, 35, 40 at our fitness classes in person. So we would kind of start, majority of them would be in person. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would, you know, we were thinking about is staff. When we train our staff, we have a month, a week of staff training. And a lot of that stuff that we can do virtually, we probably will do now and not have to bring students in so early.
I see.
So I think that's where we benefit, that we can do a lot of the stuff virtually and then bring them in on campus for specific trainings and not waste our time, you know, with these little, you know, FERPA and these all small little trainings that we have to do with our staff.
Right. Right. I know the rec center is, rec and wellness center is geared towards students, but did you take note of any faculty or staff members who were present during this time period and did use the facility as well as the students?
I don't know exactly what that ratio was. But you know what, when COVID happened, we stopped all faculty staff memberships. We paused everyone and graduate students as well. And then when we reopened, you know, if people had, didn't want to come back, we still paused their memberships for them. So we weren't going to start them if they weren't comfortable coming back to the rec center. And then anyone that we didn't have to refund. So if they said, oh, keep our membership, I'm going to start back up in December, we would add another month to their membership. So we tried to keep anyone who had a membership with us to kind of pause it. And when they're comfortable enough to come in, that we would start it for them. Okay. And then give everyone a free month just to kind of, you know, obviously it was a really abrupt stop when we had to close down the center. Mm-hmm. But I don't know exactly. I mean, I see a couple of people up here and there, faculty staff, but I to identify who is a faculty staff is kind of a little bit difficult. So
I see. How did you keep up with the news about Stony Brook?
Well, we're constantly getting emails, but my supervisor would constantly check in and send us emails or have meetings and saying, okay, this is what's going on. I always had to reach out to my supervisor if I had any questions. I was able to reach out. Our vice president was very communicated very well about what was going on and what the steps were. Like every day, you know, we'd get our email once a day, you know, once every 3 days about updates of what's going on campus. Very supportive of the work from home model, like 100%, which was nice to hear that they were supporting the work from home. And when they put it into full gear, 100%, that it was nice to kind of something to fall back on.
Right. So, When and if we go back to full time again, are you entertaining the idea of a hybrid work from home, work from work?
Well, the funny thing, yeah, we have the option, I guess, one day of working from home, rec and wellness staff, but we don't. I mean, from day one, when they told us we could come back, we all came back and we never really worked from home.
I see.
So it's we enjoy being in the office. So we have never really used it. You know, if someone has a doctor's appointment, they'll say, I'm going to go work from home in the afternoon. That's fine. But 95% of the time we're in the office and we don't want to work from home anymore. We're done.
So all of you, I mean, you it's four or five staff members.
Four of us. It's me, Tom. Yeah. Four of us.
Mm-hmm. And you're all back full time.
Yep, day one, July 15th, whatever it was, we all came back. I said, you guys, you don't have to come back. We can stagger who wants to work. And they're like, nope, we all want to come back. I said, okay. So it's just nice to be around people. You know, it's nice to be around people. It's nice to leave the house. You know, it's like you was locked in your house the whole time and now you're able to go out freely. Yeah. So it's nice to get out.
Yes. Yeah, and I like what you said. You had the opportunity to further engage with your students more so, or your student staff more so than you had in the 20 years that you've been here, 20 plus years that you've been here, no?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, it's just, you know, I think you guys are like, you know, I'm not comparing them to nurses or doctors in any way, but they're essential workers. They're face-to-face with people coming in. You know, and I'm like, I appreciate you doing this. Like, I appreciate you working and, you know, risking, you know, getting COVID for us. You know, it's just, to me, it's something that, you know, I applaud them for, you know, not worrying, you know, about worrying about recreation and making sure that the building is open and working.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is the final question on the list. I did ask you a few questions off list, but this is the last one. What would you like people to know about this time in your life and what you experienced?
I, you know, again, I hope I never have to experience anything of this. I guess it's a once in a lifetime, you know, thing that happened to all of us that we, you know, and again, we were able to, you weren't alone because everyone was going through the exact same thing you're going through. So it was nice to have other people to talk to and to, you know, tell you this is how I'm feeling. This is what I, you know, what I'm afraid of. And people kind of acknowledged it because they were exactly feeling the same way as you. I think, you know, and you look back in 20 years and I told my son who's 15, I said, you know, Michael, this is, you're going to look back at this time and it's going to be in the history books and you're going to be, your kids are going to learn about it and you have experienced it firsthand, like what it means to be in a pandemic, you know, and the amount of people's lives that were lost and, you know, what we did, you know, he'd stay home. He couldn't socialize with anyone. It's like Fort Knox. And I think, you know, I said, you know, remember it because, you know, you're going to, you know, you go, you talk to your parents about they were in the Spanish flu, you know, wherever they experienced the wars or what have you. And they were like, oh, this is what I, the depression. And they tell you all these stories. And I'm like, well, that's what we're going to be telling people in 30, 40 years from now.
Yes.
About our experiences with this pandemic. And, you know someone who's died, whether it's a family member or a friend of a friend, like everyone knows someone.
Yep.
It's like, where were you 9/11? Where were you during the COVID? I mean, it's just two life-changing events that have happened in my lifetime anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, I agree. Oh, there's a question, actually, I'll start. Your meetings now, are it with the four of you, are they in person or do you do a virtual in the office?
We actually don't meet now anymore. Okay. Because we're always talking to each other anyway.
Okay.
So we don't really meet. I mean, and if we, well, actually we have not set up a Zoom as a team meeting since we've been back into the office, to be honest with you. That's funny. Mm-hmm. We just met when we were in Zoom. And then when we got back, it was just like, okay. And we have everyone has a very good relationship. So it's constantly checking in with everyone. So it's, we all know what everyone else is doing, which is really nice.
Right. Yeah, I was when we returned partially, and I remember walking down the hallway in the library, and I saw two of my colleagues, and they were in Zoom meetings, and I had to walk into one of their offices. Turns out they were having a Zoom meeting with each other, and they were right across the hall from me. I mean, I laughed, but
it's kind of weird. Yeah.
Yes, it was a little strange at the surreal at the same time.
Yeah, we had a lunch in our conference room, but that we stopped that pretty quickly. It was one time, and then there was someone was exposed to someone who had COVID, and I was like, well, that's the end of that. We kind of let our guard down, but we were just kind of getting too comfortable.
Right.
And we were 6 feet apart. We had our masks except for eating, and then like 2 days later, they're like, oh, my friend has COVID, and I was like, oh, great, we were all in the same room. And then you think about it, and you're like, how stupid am I? Like, you know, why am I doing this? I wouldn't have done it, and blah, blah, blah. And then you're kind of like stressed about it for the next 3 days to see if you get anything or you got to get your test. And,
right.
You know, it's just kind of any kind of exposure that you might have had indirectly now is like on your mind.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, did I get it?
And, you know, the behavior is still not second nature to us. So we still have to think about putting that mask on. And,
oh, yeah. I literally ran out of my office to get my laptop. It was charging. I mean, it's 2 feet away, but I didn't have my mask on. And then I saw people and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm sorry. I don't have my mask. I put my hands over my mouth. And I was like, what am I thinking?
Yeah. I it's been what, almost a year now, and I think there are times when I go somewhere and I have to think My gosh, that's right. It was last week? I think I was walking down the hall, and everybody walking towards me had a mask, and I had assumed, I didn't even think that I didn't think about it. Turns out I didn't have my mask on. It was in my hand. But again, it was in second nature still. It's been a year, almost a year, and it's still
Well, it's
not.
funny because we bought lanyards, so we have our masks around our neck at all times. Like I have it around my neck at all times because I would never remember it. So when I need it, I just pick it up because it's on a like a lanyard now. So,
Right.
and
That's
that's kind
funny.
of, the giveaway, a lanyard, to keep your mask intact on around your
Right.
neck.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
No, I mean, thank you for the opportunity. I mean, I think it's the perspective that you get from something being involved, being in this is changes your perspective on life, I think. And
Absolutely.
especially when Suffolk County was the highest, COVID rate at one point, and you're watching the news and you're like, that's where I live. Like, this is the worst. It's like in every town and small town in the country, Suffolk County is number one. That's crazy to me. And I'm like, are there, then you're like, are they reporting this across in the news in California, in Montana, that Suffolk County, this little place in Long Island is the highest rate? So you kind of like, you put on the map for something that's horrible.
Yeah, and you folks are coming back to work in July and seeing the hall. I remember just taking a walk when at lunchtime I take a walk. And there's something still very jarring seeing those hospitals
Oh
up.
yeah. I mean,
And
they were there to keep people from dying.
yeah.
The intention was, I mean, I think they had, I'm gonna say 300 or 400 people in each hospital. Like that's what the numbers were. Like ridiculous amount of numbers that they were gonna be able to fill those hospitals with. And you're just like, that's crazy. And they have like five of them set up. It's not just two. There's, I think, five or six they set up here.
Wow. Well, thankfully they were
Believe.
put to use to full use, I should say.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and then the thing is, why didn't they put up sooner? And why'd they get put up at the right when it got really bad? But who knows? You can't think about that hindsight.
Yeah, who's going to be able to predict this? I don't
No,
think I
I
think
don't
we're
think
all
anyone did.
right.
I mean, like I said, like when it was in Washington State, I was like, oh, it's not coming here. And I'm like, it's a flu. I've had the flu before. It's not a big deal. That's my thinking in the beginning. And then I'm like, well, people are dying that are healthy.
Yes, it's very, very scary. Well, thank you. Anything else? You're
Yeah.
cool. We're cool.
Yeah, I'm good.